It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. Certainly appreciate it. I'm calling you from remote location this morning. I'm actually calling you from the coast of Maine. For all of you who've listened to me for a long time, 26 years I've been on the Great Outdoors Show, you know that each August I have the good fortune to head to the East Coast and head to Maine. And so I'm going to bring you up to speed on things that we may not know about in the Midwest, but which are certainly relevant to us from Maine. And then I'm going to take you out west, and we're going to talk about Lake Mead and Lake Powell, which have reached new record lows, and what that means. And then I also am going to talk for a moment about the fires that continue to burn, and some conversations I've had and some things that may be happening. But let me start off with good morning from Maine, where the Gulf of Maine is the subject of much discussion, because the Gulf of Maine, which controls the fishery of the North Atlantic, is experiencing the most rapid rise in temperature of any sea in the world. The Gulf of Maine is fed normally, and it's rising faster than 99% of the world's global oceans. So you can say, oh, see, climate change is doing this. And I'm not saying it's not. Climate change is definitely changing. But what's happening is, it is rising three times faster than the global average of oceans. And this is driven by a weakening of what is an ice-cold Labrador current coming down from Labrador and a stronger warming Gulf Stream. So the region of the Gulf of Maine, which is one of the most fertile fisheries in the world, is going through rapid change. And I can attest that many years ago, when you jumped into the waters in the Atlantic and Maine, it was often in the upper 50s and low 60s. I can tell you right now, it's often in the upper 60s and low 70s. That's not an exaggeration. Over about 30 years, there has been, I would say, about a 10-degree change in the water temperature. And I have been doing this for a long time in the same place. And that is, so you could say it's anecdotal. It's not anecdotal in the context that there are lots of records. And the water appears to be on some days as much as 10 degrees warmer than it ever was. That's a huge change. The other thing that happens with expanding warm water is less dense than cold water, and therefore it rises, swells, if you will, and there's no question that in areas of Maine, the high tides are higher than they were 25 years ago by not just an inch or two, but by a foot or more as they slam against breakwalls. So there's things we don't see in the Midwest. They're absolutely happening in one of the world's most important fisheries. What it's also meant is, shockingly, great white sharks, which if you saw a great white shark 5 or 7 years ago, it was front page news in Bangor, Maine, or Portland, or Bahaber, as they call it, all over the coast of Maine. A great white would have been an absolute front page news item. Now they're as common as sunrises. It's just unbelievable how fast this ecosystem, right before my eyes in this case, has changed. And people who live here 365 can talk about it much better than I can, with the exception that during this specific time period in August, I got a lot of history here. And my history says, growing up here, there was never a great white shark. It was unheard of. There were lots of seals. There were lots of mackerel. There were no striped bass. Occasionally, there was a bluefish. There were no tuna. There certainly were no loggerhead turtles. Everything that I've talked about in the last 20 seconds is here now and is common. Striped bass numbers, the schools can be in the thousands. The only problem with striped bass schools right now is that they appear to be full of mature fish, not young fish. So the fish that would ordinarily keep a population stable, there seems to be a whole missing of a series of age classes, and striped bass primarily feed on menhaden, or bunker fish as they're called, and they primarily rear in the Chesapeake and then move up and down the coast with the currents. The warmer the water, the more striped bass. Striped bass are common. Tuna. Who ever heard of a tuna being seen 500 yards from shore, or even 100 yards from shore off the coast of Maine? You see that now. Whales spouting all over. And sharks, literally, sharks are now a daily sighting. The beaches are constantly being closed in the south of Maine because of the number of sharks that are being seen every day on the beach. Paddleboarding, which is a huge activity on the coast of Maine, not so much right now. And lots of people swim in wetsuits and do marathon swimming. That's all ended. So in just a matter of a very few years, we've seen an entire change in the ecosystem. Lobsters, we all love lobsters. This past winter was a very, very cold winter in Maine. And the lobstermen that I interact with every year told me that for the first time in years, lobsters started to go south again. They have been following lobsters north. Lobsters now are common all the way up northern Maine, Lubbock, Maine, on up into Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Suddenly there are lobsters where there were very few lobsters, and now the lobster industry is huge. Meanwhile, in the south of Maine, there are fewer and fewer lobster pots. But this winter, more lobsters showed up for the first time in a long time, and they think it's because of the cold water. So we think of lobster as crawling along on the bottom, and actually a lobster can cover a lot of ground, believe it or not, very quickly. Their tail is powerful, and it's not uncommon for lobster to go miles, just literally miles, on the ocean floor in a matter of weeks' time or more. So this notion that they just crawl along and stay where you find them is not true. But basically, in the most rapid warming waters on Earth, the Gulf of Maine, it has gone from a cold water fishery, cod and just very, very cold water species, lots of seals, to suddenly a fishery and a Gulf that represents a lot more of what Nantucket and Cape Cod and Rhode Island looked like 25 years ago. All of this is moving north. And if the Labrador current continues to weaken, and if the Gulf current continues to come westward, this will only accelerate the rate of change. Of course, we could find 3 years from now, or even 2 years from now, the Labrador current has re-strengthened and is funneling that Arctic cold water down the coast of Maine towards Boston. And this could all reverse, but it's not often you can say before your own eyes, in a relatively short period of time, you see an absolutely massive change in species. That is what is happening here on the coast of Maine. And when I come back, I'll talk a bit about what's happening with the fires in the West, which is really disconcerting in what's going on. But from Maine, the lobster still tastes great. And I can tell you, lobster prices, given the prices of everything that have gone up so much, lobster prices haven't budged at all. In fact, lobsters may be now the bargain. Instead of being a delicacy that costs more than anything else, they certainly cost a lot less than steak. If you find a lobsterman coming in off a boat and you buy it right off his boat, you're going to get a lobster. You're going to get a full-grown lobster for about $10. Prices have just not moved, which is great if you like lobster, and I like lobster. I'll be back in just a moment. But first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers. You're listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host. Thanks for listening. I did forget to mention in the beginning of the show when I was talking about changes in Maine, this is not a change with the Gulf of Maine and the water temperatures. This is a sighting that is just off the charts. I was walking down a isolated beach the other day, and I saw a bird about 100 yards up from the shore that looked distinctly like a small penguin. I got closer and closer. No, I did not find a penguin on the coast of Maine. I found a common murres. And for those of you who want to look it up, it's M-U-R-R-E-S. The only thing is there is nothing common about a murre being south of the Arctic this time of the year. They are bred in huge colonies up in the Arctic, and they live in the coldest of water. I've seen them when I've been in Greenland. In fact, 2 years ago when we were duck hunting in Greenland, we had common murres all over. I've seen them in Nova Scotia. I've seen them in Labrador. I have never seen them in southern Maine. And for that matter, no one I can find has ever seen a common murre in southern Maine. It was a solitary bird. It was a young bird. So the question is, how did this bird get here? They are huge colony nesters. In fact, the eggs of murres have distinct colors and spots on them. And that is how, when the murres go out to feed in the ocean and they come back to the rocky cliffs where the murres are born and where they lay their eggs, rather, the females identify their own eggs by its distinct colors or spots. So how did a single young murre get from the subarctic or the Arctic down to near Portland, Maine? Absolutely nobody knows, but it's a complete anomaly. It's here, and so far it has not been eaten by an eagle or an osprey or a gull. It sits on the beach and it's preening and feeding, and it's been now here for several days, and you literally can walk up to within a couple feet of it and look at it. It's not a beach that has a lot of traffic. And so far, the state of Maine has not come up and decided they need to save the murre. I'm sure that a single bird like this, by the way, is not going to do well. It has nothing for protection. It's a juvenile bird, and it's sitting there looking like a great big tasty dessert or meal for any of the number of birds of prey that are in this part of the birds of prey that are in this part of the state. Okay, moving on. Fires in the West. I've talked about this several times over the last month, but I'm not quite going to let this go yet, because what's happening is unfathomable. The air quality has been horrific now for over a month in Oregon, Nevada, Idaho, of course, occasionally in Chicago, we've seen it. But every single day, the air quality is just awful. And the fires are now reached the point, they call it the big grass fire, is closing in on 700,000 acres. When I first reported it, it was a couple hundred thousand. Now it's 700,000 acres. Cattle are lost by not just a few. Cattle are lost in great numbers. The loss of property. A lot of this fire is burning in some of the most important summer cattle range country in the West. The loss of forage is going to be several years in the making. But more importantly, what's happening right now is a lot of ranchers and people who are not ranchers are beginning to think, who's responsible for this? And it won't come as a surprise to you, because I've talked about this for years. A lot of this is due to the zealots and the radicals on the fringe of the environmental movement, who continue to sue the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Reclamation, the U.S. Forest Service, continue to sue to have the number of cattle reduced on the American West. And they tie up for years ranches in court cases while they argue over how many cows can be on a ranch. The result is that a lot of the American West right now has way too much fuel on the ground, grass, and not enough cattle to eat it. And that is caused by these litigious organizations, which masquerade as environmental groups. They're not environmental groups. They're anti-cattle groups. You know, Cattle Free by 23 was a big slogan of theirs. They didn't quite achieve, but they've caused people to spend tens of millions, if not more, collectively trying to be able to graze cattle where they've historically been grazed. So when you think of the Western landscape and you think of these groups, Western Watershed and others, that are do nothing for habitat, they do a lot to clog up our courts and trying to undermine the entire ranching community of the American West so that we have no cattle. Well, guess what happens? You have a lot of fuel on the ground, a lot of grass. When you have a lot of grass, it burns. So if the buffalo were here, if we were talking 150 and more years ago, these areas would have been covered by probably millions of buffalo collectively, but tens and tens of thousands of buffalo would have been grazing in these areas that are now on fire, instead of a lot fewer cattle than there ever were buffalo. So the reduction in cattle numbers has led to these fires getting as bad as they are. It's not the reason we have fires, but it is part of the reason that these fires have grown to such a level where, instead of having a few thousand acres burn and be able to control it, we're, you know, have these fires that are now 700,000 acres and more. The big grass fire is in Oregon, it's in Nevada, and it's in Idaho. It's in three states, and it is not under control yet at all, by any means. So what's happening in the West? There are people talking about it's time to fight back. It's time to fight back against the radical environmental groups and, in fact, sue them. Sue them for involuntary manslaughter. People are dying. Sue them for the loss of cattle. Millions of dollars worth of cattle are lost. But most importantly, sue them for health. People, asthma is rampant right now in the West. I talked to a rancher the other day who said simply everyone in southern Idaho's got a sore throat and sore eyes. The air quality is terrible. And yet there's no consequence for these environmental groups that have in part caused this, or at least made it much worse than it ever would have been. So that is going to have to resolve itself. But it's the first time I recall in all the years I've been doing this that people are actually willing to say, wait a minute, let's go after the people that are partially responsible or maybe responsible for this. They can't get a pass anymore, and public health can't allow it to be just absolutely beaten into the ground and have people getting sick and dying because of these fires. And that's what's happening. Thanks so much for listening. I did not get to Lake Mead and Lake Powell. I will next week. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.